Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Ukrainian Football Review podcast from Ukrfoot24. A big thank you to Stella Shoot the Defence for giving us the platform to put this out, as always. And as always, it's really great to have Andrew from Zorya Lundance with me today. Andrew, hope you had a good couple of weeks.
Hi, everyone. Yep, been keeping up with a lot of football, so a lot to talk to through today.
And Andrei, the King of North Kiev, great to have you with us again. Good to get the Persia League started.
Yeah, definitely. Hello, everyone. Good to be here. Pleasure to hear everyone as well.
And really happy to welcome Neil Holloway tonight. Neil is a Cambridge slash Kharkiv native. And we're going to be diving a little bit more into Kharkiv football later in the podcast today. Neil, great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on today.
And I must apologise for taking you away from the second half of the Villarreal United games.
No worries. I'm sure I probably have had a heart attack anyway at some point during it. So.
Right then.
My wife getting angry.
Well, let's start off by looking back, and towards the end of the last podcast, we had a long talk about the European games and the need for Ukraine to pick up some coefficient points, and the boys didn't let us down, did they, at all? It was a great week of European action. Andrew, shall we start with the Dynamo game? What was your take on it? I mean, it was a very comfortable result in the end.
Yeah, I mean, well, if for anyone who doesn't know, Dynamo won 2-0 against AZ. Gerson Rodriguez and Shapurenko capped off a comfortable in the end win. Quite a flat first half with a couple of scares, but it felt all a bit slightly friendly atmosphere in that first half, a bit cagey. And then in the second half, Lucescu tactics, half-time team talk must have come through. And yeah, Rodriguez came up trumps once again, scored a nice goal set up by Bujalski. And then Shapurenko capped off quite a good midfield display where he's one of the key men in the team for sure. And he's another one of these resurrection cases under Lucescu. Alongside Rodriguez, and he capped off with a nice little header towards the end, setting up Dynamo for a tie against Ghent this week. So let's see how that goes.
The battle of Ukraine lies ahead for us all. Neil, just going to touch on you there. As you mentioned, you know, you're a Villa fan, and we saw Ron Vlahar poke his head up, didn't we, Tuesday night? Do you think Dynamo had a real challenge when you've got, was he 35, 36 years old there, marshalling the defence for them?
I mean, he's got the experience. That's clearly something. And I don't think Alkmaar, they're a pushover by any stretch of the imagination. So I think it was a good result for Dynamo in the end, although, as Andrew was saying, the first half was a bit disappointing, to say the least. But yeah, Concrete Ron, he's not been concrete for a long time, has he? So, I mean, he always thought he was going to end up in the Champions League, and he did, but I don't think that's what he had in mind, really.
Nor do I. But yeah, Andre, you impressed with Dynamo Tuesday night? Was it what you expected?
Well, there is no possible game of Dinamo which might impress me, you know, with all my interest to that team. However, you could tell that it was all part of the plan from Lucescu. The first half, he mentioned that he explained it in the post-match interview then, that the plan was to not to let AZ come through between the lines, which they actually did quite a lot of times. But again, it's a matter of, finishing. Like every other team who plays with Dynamo, as I mentioned in previous podcast, AZ is lower class team than Dynamo, and just like happened with the Ukraine-Switzerland game, when Switzerland had plenty of chances but didn't convert them, same happened here with AZ. There was pretty much like a lot of danger, or you could tell from the first half, but in the second half, the mistake happened. Lucescu explained that they were expecting the mistake, and it happened. Ron Vlahar, whom you mentioned, he just ran into the ball and got beaten by one of the wingers, and eventually Gerson scored the first one. So, yeah, no miracles there, but this first half of Lucescu becomes a trademark recently, as it's been with Shakhtar, AZ and Lviv in the league game, which we will discuss shortly.
You're right there. And then, as Andrew said, we're looking forward now to later this week with the game against the mighty Belgians. How do we think it's going to go? What would you say, Andrew?
Yeah, quite a match is going to be. It's been a while since Dinamo got into the group stage, but as far as I can remember, it's always been a final battle for them. An ultimate match is the finals of all finals is the playoffs in Champions League. It's not about the group stage. It's not about qualifying further. It's about getting into group stage itself. And this is one of those matches, and it all comes back. And you couldn't think of a better opponent than Ukrainians of Ghent, who are all the first team players, plus Toon, who, of course, as you all remember, is a former Obolon star of defense. Then we have Bezos and Yaremchuk, who is a Dynamo Kyiv ex-player. So, yeah, quite a game is going to be. Honestly, I'll be supporting Plastoon, but, you know, all bets are off.
Well, when we put the guys up, sort of, you know, man to man, Andrew, would you say Dynamo should win when you measure them?
Well, this is a two-legged tie, just as an FYI, because I think all the ties beforehand have just been singular ones. So I think that's got to be kept in mind. Dynamo got the first leg away, which I think is a positive as usual. You know, try and get a goal, take it back to Kyiv and do the classic Lucescu park the bus type tactics. However, I think man to man, I think they've got quite a few injuries coming into this one. I think one of their key midfielders, Sven Coombs, is out. Bezos won't be playing, but he's been bit part this season anyway. And De Poitra, who's plays alongside Yaremchuk up top, is actually also out of this first leg. So I think Dynamo have got an advantage there, for sure. And Ghent have had quite a strange start to the season with their manager difficulties since the sort of the new managers have been installed after their previous manager Laszlo was sacked. They've won both their games, so maybe it might be that upward trajectory, but I guess I'd expect Dynamo probably to come away without a loss in that first leg. I won't put a score on it.
Neil, would you agree with Andrew there? Looking for a draw, shall we say?
I think, I mean, we've seen it with Lucescu at Shakhtar Donetsk that he'd it's the sort of thing that he'd, the way he'd set up an away game and then try and bring it back to Kyiv. It's difficult to say what will happen with Ghent, because I've watched a couple of their games because of the Ukrainian contingent, and they haven't looked good. I mean, Yaremchuk was very sort of critical of the previous manager, and rightly so, to be quite honest. So I'm hoping for a good game, but I don't think we're guaranteed it by any way. We're not really guaranteed to have a really great game, I don't think, but I expect Dynamo to go through, I think, but it'll be close.
It will be fingernails time over the next 2 weeks. And then, yeah, and then moving on, of course, last Thursday, wasn't it, when Kovalivka, and Andrew, I have to say, you summed it up quite aptly in your article that you published last week. It was very well written. And it's an absolute incredible story, really. For those of you listening, for me, from my own personal take, when I first got involved in football, I kind of got the map out of professional teams and looked for the smallest club I could find. And there it was, the tiny little village in South Kiev region that plays on the school field, as it was. So, yeah, we jumped in the car and down we went and sat on the bench to watch a draw against Pre-Carpathia. And here we are last week watching them travel down to Greece to take on the mighty Aris. And yeah, Andrew, can I give you the honours of summarising what went on that magnificent night? Andrew.
Oh, right, sorry. Yeah, so of just course.
Reminiscing there, weren't you?
No, it was a great game. It was an entertaining first half with a sort of a number of chances for both sides. Costician set his team up quite well. Compact in defence. I think they were playing five at the back. Mm-hmm. Quite a defensive sort of first half. Aris had a few chances, but nothing like no concrete shots at the keeper or anything. They were playing it out wide and passing it in, which was getting cleared or blocked relatively efficiently. Second half was a whole different story. Nice early free kick, I think made by Antioch, who was a right nuisance down the left wing on the counter throughout the whole game. Bogdanov, who's renowned for his sort of set pieces, put in a quality ball in, missed by the Aris players, and Novak, new signing from Vardar in a good old Macedonia, popped it in for Kolos' first ever goal in Europe. So that was quite a moment. Then there was a bit of a fight back from Aris, and even though they got the equaliser, it was still sort of an out of nothing goal, edge of the box sort of pop shot from ex-Dnipro man Bruno Gamma. Great goal, but Kolos rallied back, which was good. They had the mighty Yevhen Morozko come on after they scored their first goal, who I was probably one of my men of the match in that game. Changed the game down the right-hand side, really sort of loads of energy and just ready on the overlap, ready for some crosses and deliveries. And he was involved in the second goal, played a ball in, Bogdanov took a volley, keeper parried, who had quite a poor game for them, and Antioch finished just right place, right time, like he was during the sort of playoffs for the Europa League last year as well, in the UPL. So yeah, overall, sort of a tactical masterclass, I'd say, from Costician. He knew exactly what he was doing. Nice setup defensively. They played on the counter, played to their strengths, and far from, you know, some sort of reserved play, they are hugely entertaining. And good luck to them against Rijeka this week.
Very nicely summed up there. Andre, did you catch the game on Thursday?
Yeah, totally. I watched the game and I quite enjoyed it. Both of those teams, Aris and Rijeka, Kolos can beat them and can proceed further. There's still one more round for them after Rijeka. So there's going to be quite a journey, but they deserve it. Looking back to the match with Aris, it's quite nervous beginning of the match. It was, especially when Bogdanov started to show off some emotions. I mean, the only person I'm not confident in this lineup of Kolos is him. Because he's emotional, he's known for that. He's a good shot taker and a free kick taker, but he can be trouble. You know, it's some kind of Roy Keane kind of trouble for Kolos, because he plays the same position and he's got the same personality. But Kolos is very creative, and Morozko is definitely the number 10 and the most creative player they have. Although they proved that Antioch and even Selesnyov could play their part as well. I think if they all start against Rijeka, and if Costician does not pick up this five man in the back tactic, which seemed as a typical shoot and play tactic from Ukrainian coaches in Europe, just to wait through, just to stand in the back and punch the ball to safety. But it didn't play out that way, and all credit to Kostyshyn. But I'm really hoping for more attacking play against Rijeka. I mean, if you want to proceed, you have to do it in style.
You do. Andrew, can I just check with you there? Is it a one-leg or a two-legged affair this week?
It's a one-legged affair.
It is.
Yeah.
Neil, can you think of anything quite like the Kovalivka story, really? I mean, it's quite incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, no, not at all. Nothing really similar to it. We have seen over the years quite a lot of teams sort of come and disappear off the Ukrainian football map. So it's good that one of them's finally made it to sort of the promised land. I'm a big fan of Kostyshyn. When he was a player at CSKA, I really liked that team. Show my age there, really, aren't I? Though I remember him playing for CSKA. Crikey. You know, and the firepower that they've got, you know, Selezinov can come off the bench, and Isayenko, the young prospect from Dinamo there as well. But I think they've got a lot of promise. But, you know, I think there are other teams that come from a similar sort of background that are punching above their weight a little bit, like Inhulets and Minai as well, and doing really well. I think I've made it quite clear on social media that I'm a bit of a traditionalist, though, and I quite like seeing the big City clubs up there, really, if I'm honest.
Fair enough. So what are we looking for then on Thursday on the away in Croatia? Confident, everyone? As predictions, I'm coming to you, Andre, first.
Yeah, once again, Nicholas is going on vacation in probably not so sunny Croatia, but I hope they will have a good time. And yeah, I'm confident that Kolas should do everything in their power to proceed. And, pretty evenly matched teams, to be fair. But the passion, the the motivation they have, and they should pick up more as they go. So I really hope it's going to be a victory for them.
Andre?
Well, following the game on Thursday, the owner, Andriy Zasucha, organised a trip on the Friday to Mount Athos in Greece. So they went to a monastery by some Greek monks. So they'll have the support of God on their side against Rijeka. So we'll see. I'm going to say it's probably going to be another low-scoring one. Maybe a 1-0. I don't know too much about Rijeka just to be confident enough, but I'll say a scrape.
Okay, and over to you, Neil.
I'm going to say 2-1 to Kolos.
Fingers crossed. And Andre, I'm going to go against you there, and I'm going to say I hope they played the five at the back again and give them a place. I think
all power to you.
Yeah, I think they've got the guys, as you said, there is some creativity up top, and they've got the ability to grab a goal in Croatia. I'm going to go for 1-0 there as well. I am a lot more optimistic of Kolos' chances than Desna's, and Desna obviously had another hit this week with Filipov moving on to Belgium, which I believe has been confirmed now. We'll go into Desna a little bit deeper later on, but what do we think? Anyone think Desna's got chances on their difficult trip to Germany? Andrew, I'm going to come to you because you've got an interesting look on your face there.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, talk about baptism of fire, really. Yeah, I mean, well, Wolfsburg were handed to them by Shakhtar last season, but I mean, Desna really not even that close in sort of the level of quality. I mean, you could have a sort of it's a one-off leg away. You never know, really. If Desna are on their game, maybe they can somehow get it to pens or something like that. But just sort of how the season's panned out, they've lost their key. They lost their key defender Favorov and captain. They're losing Filipov now. As we'll touch on later on about Desna in the league, maybe just a little bit of lacking sort of team morale potentially just from those slight changes. So yeah, I wouldn't expect too much personally. I don't think they're going to make it through.
Not going on your accumulator. Andre, any optimism over there?
Not much, to be fair. Looking back at Desna's tactics, it's all about crossing into the box, looking for tall strikers. And as we know, Filippo left and not much of an ability, of goal-scoring ability left in the lineup. I don't know. All hopes for another great, so-called great tactic, Rabocon, who can pull everything out of the man he has. But again, no such great hopes in terms of style of play. Basic, to hold on and to probably nick a goal accidentally. Maybe move on to penalties. But overall, pessimistic.
Mm-hmm. Neil, do you agree with the boys?
Yeah, I can't see them getting much out of Wolfsburg at all. They played pretty well against Leverkusen yesterday as well, although it was a 0-0 draw. I can't see Desna getting much from them at all. So.
What do we think, guys, about the sale of Filippo Vos? Good piece of business by Desna, in all truth. Andrew, come to you first there.
Yeah, I mean, they've got their asking price for him, I think. That's what the rumour's been. They wanted 1.5 million euros for him, and they've got that. And Filipov has got his sort of move to a bigger club. I think he was linked somewhere in Hungary, which, I mean, Belgian league's obviously evidently better than that. Not sure really of the level of St. Truiden in terms of they're not pushing for the title or anything like that. But I think I think in the interview post-match or something on the other day, Rabocon said it was for Filipov to try and get a place in the national team. So we'll see. Shevchenko said that he needs to be playing in Europe / in European competitions, but don't know whether that's exactly what he was thinking. But I guess we'll see whether it's a flop or not in the future.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I know from my contacts in the game that the scouts from Hungary were here in June, July, and when they were put off by the asking price themselves, and I think a number of the clubs were valuing him a long way south of €1 million, and the 1.5 or something Desna were keeping firm at. And as we know in this game, money talks, doesn't it? So if they've got it, all credit to Desna. I know they've got plans there to purchase their stadium from the city council and starting to develop the site there a bit more. So if it helps them that way, all credit to them. Andre, do you see the sense in the Filipov move?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great move for him. Quite a perspective to... make a name for himself in Europe. It sounds selfish from Rabocon, as his only motivation moving to Belgium was a place in the national team. I mean, well, it's like whatever works, but it doesn't seem like it in his case. He's got some skill, and he's a goal scorer, and he's got some tricks behind his belt. I mean, he's not a typical target man. He can play different positions, different styles, but it's quite shady if you talk about the situation. Desna, I mean, Favorov left, Filipov left, and Filipov denied his move to St. Truiden previously. We need a bit of more insight of what's going on in Desna to be confident about the future of the team. But overall, I am happy for Filipov, and best of luck to him.
Yeah. Shall we start with Desna with their game this weekend away at Ingolets? And Neil, you mentioned earlier about Ingolets. Have you been impressed with them so far this season?
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed with them for a few seasons, to be honest. So concentrating more on the Persia Liga, as I do anyway, and having seen the competition that you know, there's some decent teams in that league, and they've sort of come from nowhere, and they've always looked impressive without sort of bending the rules, and like I feel some of the other clubs in that position do. And also the fact that they sponsored one of the Metalist games, that they, that was sort of endeared me to them a little bit as well. So. But yeah, I mean, I've been very impressed by them. You know, a team from that size of a place coming up and doing well and doing things the right way. I feel like they do things the right way. Maybe the guys disagree, but I'm not sure how they see it.
Andrew, what was your take on the game? Impressive Inglet holding on for the draw there.
Yeah, I mean, the player I was mainly impressed with actually was Sichinava. He, what a game he had is all I can say. Almost scored a bicycle kick and then scored probably one of the goals of the season already. Just a power pop shot from about 30 yards out and passed, had no chance. And I mean, not surprising, seeing as he was player of the season in Petrolica last year, and he got a load of goals. I mean, reality, Desnap probably should be looking at maybe even recruiting him before the end of the window to try and solve their forward issue, because, I mean, they've got Dekhtaryov, they've got Budkivsky, these sort of like target strong men who aren't really that reliable in front of goal on their own anyway. I think the only sort of closest replacement to Filipov they had playing in the game was Khlobas, and he's never really showed any sort of similar top-level consistent goal scoring for a number of seasons. So, yeah, I mean, the game actually panned out was quite a bit, you know, underwhelming from Desna's point of view, because they came out quite attacking formation, had a load of attackers on the pitch, Kalitvintsev, Budkivsky came on later, Dekhtaryov, Khlobas, and then towards the end of it, sort of just phased out. Desna had quite a few chances, but they kept it. Inhalets were quite solid at the back. And I think Shevtsov had a few, came on right at the end of the half, who's quite a promising forward / centre attacking midfielder from the Desna youth team, who's really impressed over the last couple of seasons. And, you know, He had a few chances where he should have probably buried it and got a goal in his debut. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, not the best warm-up for Desna ahead of the Europa. But I mean, you know, probably a fair result on the base of the 90 minutes.
Definitely, definitely. Andre, did you catch up with the game on, was it Saturday afternoon?
Yes, I did. I watched the game. Quite disappointed by Desna not winning it, because it was all in our hands and I had to score the winner in the end. But before that match, I predicted a finishing table of Premier League after that season, after the league finish, and I put Desna in second place. I'll be honest with you. I really considered them to make the move, you know, to rush for it. You know, and this match definitely didn't show didn't prove my expectations, and I don't see there much them to be the second strength of Ukrainian league. I mean, the second top team. If you talk about Inhulet, quite a performance. Unfortunately, Sichinava picked up an injury. Hope he recovers shortly. If you watch the game from the beginning, it's all, you know, if you even if you rewind the game back and forth, you only see Desna crossing in the ball, Inhulet clearing it, and once again and again. So I hope Inhulet will show more of that team spirit in upcoming games. And it was a close match, and but Desna should have won it, definitely.
I want to pick out a different guy for Inglet there, Andrew. I'm going to challenge you with their star striker and raise you with Yevgen Zaporozhvets. I might have pronounced his name wrong. He played right midfield for Inglet. And he had a bloody brilliant game, I thought. I was just astounded. He doesn't score the goals, but he intercepted about 10 balls in the opposition half. What really amazed me with Ingles, and you know, I've watched a bit of Ukrainian football over the years as well, and one of the things that's quite traditional, as Andrei was saying earlier, is the sort of the methodical five at the back or the four at the back and the like. But they really played on the front foot. They were winning the ball a lot in Desna's half. And I mean, it wasn't a complete domination. Desna had the majority of the possession. But when they won the ball, they were attacking with purpose. And it was really refreshing to see this almost full press, Liverpool from the village, shall we say, style of football. And yeah, I was quite excited. I was asked to do a piece on Ukrainian football from the weekend, and I wanted to see how Desna coped without Filipov, and my eyes were took away from Desna and turned on to Ingles. I was really quite impressed for a first season. They are going to get beaten a few times this year. I think they'll get spanked a couple of times, but I could see them pulling off a few shock results as the year progresses, as long as they keep on the same positive front foot going into games. Just for my own take on it there. Anyway, we've got bigger things to talk about than the mighty Ingles. Sorry, Andrew. So, yeah, and on to Dinamo. And it was almost the classic Dinamo game from last season this weekend with the lovely match. But a bit of Lucescu magic touch, or whatever we want to call it, sorted them out in the end. Andre, you were mentioning traditional Lucescu tactics. What happened on the weekend then against Lviv?
Yeah, it's yet again, it was calm first half, even against Lviv, with plenty of shouting and helping out from their manager from the sideline. He was shouting all over the place, and it actually held, because they held 0-0 till the break. And the only player who actually moved the ball from Dinamo Kyiv side was Bushan. So in halftime, also Lucescu let the reserves play. So about six men started, which are not the first team choice by default. And in the second half, Tsihankov came on, Lednev was subbed, and if I'm not mistaken, Kravets was let on. But as we know now, it was his last game in Dinamo, first and last after his comeback. So yeah, Dinamo scored decent goals, especially Shaporenko, and Lviv scored as well, just walks the ball into the net. I want to say about Lucescu's magic touch, it's like, you know, this film director, Martin Scorsese, if you compare his first films, it was all action-packed. It was all, you know, this badass, you know, this criminal sense of humor, dynamic movies, which became classic. And if you look at his last movie, The Irishman, all the same cast, but they really, really old now, and it's all calm, you know. Very, it's nervous, you know, he's keeps the tense and the touch, it's still there, but it's a complete different style. So, you know, really mellow. Same with Lucescu now. We remember Shakhtar, we remember Brazilians, we remember this European wins and UEFA Cup and so on. And now in Dinamo, 75-year-old manager comes back, just, you know, waits through the first half, you know, with the experience, and you know, finishes off in the end. I don't know how long it's going to last, but that's the way I see it.
Very aptly put. Andrew, two questions for you. First one, do you have concerns now about the extent of the squad, given how poor the reserves played in the first half? And the second one, what was the impact of the sending off in the result? or was it more Luchescu's tactics, in your opinion?
Yeah, so, I mean, well, it was those players. I feel sorry for the players that were given a chance against, obviously, bottom of the league, Lviv. You're probably not going to get a better sort of occasion to show yourself against lower quality opposition. So if you're going to perform against good quality opposition, then you should definitely be performing against these guys. So yeah, as Ray touched upon, Lednev, Titashvili, Andrievsky and Shepelev, they all got subbed off at half time. Four at once, literally. There's a change from previous Dynamo managers. This guy actually makes decisive changes when it's required. No sort of pussyfooting around. He literally just hauls them off. Brought on the likes of Tsikhankov, Shaparenko, Sidorchuk and Bujalski. And yeah, they evidently increased the tempo of the game. But, you know, Dynamo got a penalty very early on in the second half, went 1-0 up, and then it was sort of back to that sort of pedestrian tempo. They had the goal, weren't really too sure where they were going to, you know, sort of go from there, just ready to sort of iron the game out like that. Then Lviv equalised, sort of off the back of nothing, just a sort of a corner free set piece thing, and then, you know, some fumbling around on the for the goal. And then, as you said there, the red card. So red card came in. I initially thought it was a penalty. I don't know why. It looked like he got fouled inside the box, and I was thinking even that's going to be a bit harsh. I mean, you don't really sort of acknowledge Shaparenko being that good with set pieces, because I've not really seen him take that many. Tsikhankov stepped back, let him have it, and Shaparenko scored. Great free kick, but, you know, you've got to have the caveat that the keeper did get a hand to it and probably should have done better. Then final goal, nice little finish from Supraha. I mean, Lviv were probably down and out then, because I think it was like 88th minute anyway. So with 10 men, that was that, to be honest. And it was good to see Supraha score, because it looked like a massive relief off his shoulders that he's had this sort of goal duct for, you know, three or four games where he's just been trying all he can, but nothing coming off for him. So maybe, hopefully, that will be good for the long run, especially coming up against Ghent and the likes of the other teams in the UPL in the coming weeks.
Definitely. I've raised more concerns about Supriaga in the past after the Olympic game in particular. Neil, moving on to you there, and I think you just heard news, I think, of the Villa one now.
Well, it was 1-0. I heard a massive cheer from downstairs, which is why I started putting myself on mute. So I'm assuming that we're winning.
am I right? I know you watch a fair bit of the under-21 team as well.
Yeah, don't tell my employers that, because it's during my working hours. But yeah, I do.
Any of the boys there impressed? You know, we're talking about the reserves, and, you know, it was a difficult game for them to make an impression, was Lviv Park the bus. Anybody there that perhaps stands out to you in this early stage of the season?
Well, I think, as I've already said before, that Isayenko, but he's now at Kolos, he really, really has impressed me quite a lot. I've mentioned a couple of other players, but I can't think of them off the top of my head at the moment. I wasn't expecting that question, so I'd have to think about it. I think they have got the quality, but quite often with Dynamo, we don't see it always go on to the first team, do we, and do what they should be doing there. So that's the one thing that would concern me, that they look good in that age group, but whether they step up to the first team, I'm not convinced 100%. But going back to the game against Lviv at the weekend, I felt like it was, like Andre was saying, it was like a Luchescu team, but in some ways it felt like a Dynamo team for the first time in ages, even though they've always had this manager with the heart of Dynamo, and that it's, you know, that they didn't make much effort, but they still won. Whereas last season, you felt like they were making a lot of effort not to win sometimes. So that's something that bodes well, I think, for them, even though the ultras might disagree with me.
Definitely, definitely. Andrew, anything you wanted to add there?
Yeah, I just think someone who's impressed me, I think maybe Neil maybe have forgotten his name, but Zabarni, who's been pulled up from the under-21s, who made his European debut against AZ, and he's been quite solid at the back, and he started alongside another academy graduate, Sirota, and I mean, I feel that they're going to be the two that will be playing for the next few weeks until Dinamo's defensive injury crisis comes back.
Yeah, and well, moving on, Sunday we had the Donbas Derby, as it's becoming aptly known, as Zorya hosting Shakhtar in Zaporizhia.
In exile,
yes. How did you see the game? I know it was a very eventful match, Andrew. Give us a brief summary of what went on. It was pretty end-to-end and all sorts going off in that match.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, initially going into the game, you saw the starting lineups and you thought, well, this is probably going to be one-way traffic for first time in a long time in this fixture. But completely different sort of story on the pitch. Shakhtar, who've not played actually in over a month, like, or close to a month since their opening game against Kolos, where they weren't the best either. They started off a bit slow, but still went ahead. Kornienko, who was making his debut under 20 World Cup winner at left back instead of Ismaili, pulled a little nice little ball across the box. Marlos tapped in. But then, sort of all turned on his head. So Real already had a few half chances here and there, and then they sort of went up the other side of the pitch. Kabayev, who really impressed me during that game, made a few nice interceptions and tackles on Shakhtar's sort of defenders who were trying to play out from the back. Intercepted, played in Kucherhin, and Kucherhin scored near post from Trubin. Probably needs to do better there, but who knows. And then Stepanenko, who had quite a poor game. I think he was at fault for that first goal when he got when he was caught sleeping for Kucherhin. And then he fouled Kucherhin in the box, which some people might say was a bit of a soft penalty. But Yurchenko stepped up, converted. Krivtsov scored the equaliser early on in the second half, and then the game sort of fizzled out. There was a few half chances from Zorya, but Hromov had a great chance to win it. But as we all know, he's awful, and he skied it.
Delicately put there. Andre, did you enjoy the game on Sunday?
Yeah, I could say that. Zorya has had a controversial start of the season after the previous massive effort up to the Champions League qualifiers. Now we know the issues inside the team, Skripnik and all these summer stories with him leaving or staying, but players support him, and you could tell that they are motivated for this match in particular, and hopefully Zorya picks up the more as they go. I mean, hopefully they add some more quality to their game after it. And you could tell that Kucherhin is a really promising lad. Maybe his next move will be in Europe. It's potentially next Zorya's transfer to, you know, as we know, they live from transfer money, and hopefully his departure would let them pay off the salaries for the summer, I guess. Hopefully, maybe, I don't know. So, yeah, decent game from Zorya, but again, not much from, you know, reserves. As we said previously, Gromov is not a replacement for, it's not a first team striker, as we know. All hopes for Yurchenko, Kucherhin, and Ivan Isenia as well. And the team spirit, of course, Skripnik's magic touch. so to say. Shakhtar is, I don't know, they should have recovered from their Europa League failure from last season, but it doesn't show yet. It's good. It's good. It's time for Warsaw to step up and some other teams. Really, they need to start, you know, pulling themselves together before the UCL group stage starts.
Definitely, definitely. News came through this evening that Zorya have signed, was it Anton Rufati, the Macedonian centre-half, was coming. I don't know. He's somebody new to me. I don't know if anyone here has heard much about him, but he's been brought in to bolster the back line there for Zorya, and hopefully we'll see him make his debut soon for them. Neil, have you been as disappointed with Zorya this year, or were you expecting it going into the season?
Not at all. The fact that Skripnik is still there, I thought that they'd do really well, and they were the ones who I expected to finish second for a long time towards the end of last season, so yeah, it has been a bit disappointing. I thought they'd be a lot better than they, you know, the way they ended last season. I thought that they'd carry on this season and push on a bit. I expected them to be closer to Shakhtar and Dinamo than they seem to be, although yesterday they did well.
Definitely. So, right then, guys, where are we going next? Vorskla or Dnipro? Which one do we want to do? Up north, I'm seeing. So, we'll go for Vorskla. Okay.
Top of the league.
They are. And all credit to them. Andrew, how did they get on then this week? Can you let everyone know?
Yeah, they beat Alexandria 2-0. Relatively comfortably. Stepanyuk, I think he's got three goals in three games now. And Putslin scored as well. So it was just a, you know, relatively solid performance. And, you know, three wins out of three, you can't knock them, to be honest.
You can't.
And you know they're confident when their sort of their star centre back at the moment, Alioune, French guy, 6'8", is dribbling from his back line all the way out to sort of almost the halfway line to recover sort of balls. So, you know, Maximov's doing wonders, and no surprise he won a manager of the week this week, probably manager of the month too, come the end of September.
What do you think has caused this big turnaround from last season? Andre, have you got any opinions on it?
Concerning Warsaw?
Yeah. What's caused the change?
It's all about the manager. He made the most of it last season when he pulled them out of Persha Liga knockouts and dragged them into the Ukraine Cup final. And now we see that they've been rested and he's got his first season break with the team, a proper one. And you could tell that they've been really up for it since the start of the season. Stepanyuk is playing really well, and as well as the African players from Vorskla. But it's good to see the team playing football, you know, and they've beaten. They had this match with Ruch 5-0, and Maxim wasn't happy with it. He needed them to score 7 goals. I support this guy, and I don't want to say any loud words, any, you know, expectations, just not to, you know, jinx anyone. But it's good to see the team going back, and him in particular, and, you know, maybe some youngsters are going to step up. It seems like Kulac has a second youth as well. And probably you should consider Vorskla's financial side of the business, because they had some managers and board replacements previously, which did not promise anything good, but for now it works out. So in terms of Alexandria, well, they have everything in their hands. They have a decent kit. they have the players, they have the manager, but you know the style they play. It's they rely on strength and not much of technical side. It's hard to predict what's going to happen with them. As we know, with Kovalets and Tretiakov and a few other players, it's two different Alexandrias, and it shows now. Well, probably a mid-table fight with some other relegated teams from the top of the table. I don't know, probably a mid-table finish. But for now, they need to, review their results.
Definitely. Neil, one for you here. Obviously, we all remember the coach sending the first team off on holiday a couple of weeks before the end of the season and seeing the youths coming in. Tactical genius there, having his guys come back refreshed. You know, we've heard everyone here mentioning how sort of tired Shakhtar have looked and off the boil. Moment of brilliance by him.
maybe. It's certainly worked out for them, all right. I mean, same if we go into the Persian League with Obolon's coach going on holiday when a key part of the season was kind of odd as well. But that's probably a story for another day, really, isn't it? But yeah, it's always seemed a bit odd to me. Players going off at the start of the season. I can't imagine it happening in the Premier League, really. But it has worked out for them. But it almost worked out for Obolon, to be fair. So.
Very true, very true. Sorry about that, Andre. I couldn't resist. they've been brilliant so far, haven't they, Vorskland? Yeah. Really have. And, fingers crossed they keep it going. It's early days for them at the moment. They couldn't have done any better at all, and been really enjoyable performances. It's great to see them back. I was in Poltava a year ago this weekend when they got beaten 5-0 by Dinamo, and it was an abysmal day. It really was. The stadium was full of very miserable people that day, and there was a lot of abuse, a lot of disenchantment amongst the crowd, and it's a big turnaround. It's a huge journey they've been on over the last 12 months. And another team we're hoping will go on a journey over the next 12 months will be Dnipro, because they seem to be at a very low ebb at the moment after a disappointing start to the season. Andre, where do you think it's gone wrong for them? You know, we've seen, obviously, the coach there has lost his job, unless I'm corrected otherwise. Why is it so bad for them down there?
The roots go back to the summer coach replacements, which should have taken place with Zorian Dnipro. They should have swapped coaches. I mean, Mikhailenko should have left back there, and Skripnik should have replaced him, and Babic should have coached Zorya after that, but none of that happened. And now we can see that Mikhailenko is fired after a disappointing start, and there are a few other people you could tell that were well known in Ukraine, such as Yovicevic, a former Karpaty player and coach. Who might have step up as a coach of Dnipro 1 shortly. It's a good signing, I would say. It's been a while since we saw him working. He's been good at Karpaty, but again, the board of Karpaty has been making wonders with him and the team itself. If we talk about Dnipro's style of play, well, Mikhailenko used to be ambitious. I mean, if you listen to him, he could tell that he is good at tactics and he's good with players, but none of that working out right now. Probably Supraha's departure plays the role. They have Hoblenko, who scores, but he's just a target man. They've got Buleta back, but that just doesn't seem to fit in this new season of Dnipro. Well, it is a disappointment, and they just need fresh blood in terms of coaching. And their last game proved that it's not the Dnipro that everyone is expecting to see and which we saw last season.
A few people have mentioned on Twitter, of course, there everybody's kind of eager for the shall we be as risque to say the real Dnipro to be in the city as this one fails to live up to it. From what I can see, the problem in the city is there's such division. There's obviously you've got this SC Dnipro manifestation that's upset a lot of the old supporters. But then you've got about Paramorgi has made its appearance in the second division this year that's based down there. And there are a number of other amateur teams that have manifested themselves over the last couple of years and have disappeared this season. There seems to be a lot of division in the Dnipro football at the moment. And until that gets rectified, it's hard to see any kind of, you know, restart of the old Dnipro club. And Neil, I saw you nodding there. Do you see anything different?
No. I mean, I think there's a big longing in Dnipro to get the real Dnipro back to where it is. I think everyone sort of realises that they need one club in that city. You know, it's a very good footballing city, and to have one club that the whole city supports, similar in Kharkiv in a way, is what they should be aiming for. I just don't think Dnipro Dean, with the background that they come from, and some even the naming of the club's slightly dodgy, isn't it? Let's be honest, it doesn't really inspire a lot of support from casual football fans, does it? Really, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of them at all, and I would love to see the real Dnipro back where they belong, I think, in the Premier League. And maybe I'm being a bit too controversial on my first time you've invited me, perhaps the last time you'll invite me with that, but that's the way I see it, really. Yeah.
Andrew, did Mariupol impress on Friday night? They've bounced back. I wouldn't think they lost the first game quite handsomely in Alexandria. What's your take on how they've performed since? You're on mute, mate.
Yeah, they're quite good. So, you know, one player who's really impressed me is Artem Bondarenko. He's a nice little centre mid that's been loaned in from Shakhtar. Where else? And yeah, he's been pretty impressive. He's impressed for the under 21s and also for Mariupol too. And it's just the usual sort of forwards that are also been playing quite well. Topalov, in particular, he's been quite sort of influential there. It's nice to see that they've got a replacement for Vakula, who left towards the end of 2019 for Shakhtar and's not playing at all. So, you know, they'll be challenging for probably the European spots, Mariupol. But, you know, that's just how it is. I feel that quite a good strengthening's been Danilo Sakan from Shakhtar's coming in. He'll probably add some goals for them, which will be good. But yeah, Ostap Markevich looks like he knows what he's doing, but you know, mid-table, and similar to Dnipro 1, Mariupol are that sort of fake team that you'd say, because they're just a bunch of Shakhtar reserves, as people like to call them.
They're not quite as obnoxious though.
Now, perhaps, and again, maybe stepping out of line, the surprise team of the last few weeks, Olympique Donetsk. Now, where have their performances come from? I saw a little piece by you, Andrew, on Twitter today. But, wow, really wow, the last two games. Some great great performances there. How they fixed it? We had them all for relegation.
Yeah, I mean, it's baffling to me because I watched the highlights of the game where they beat Menai 3-0. And I mean, first of all, the quality of the camera was absolutely like potato quality. I don't know what that is from Football One. It's at Lobanovsky Stadium. They should have some normal cameras there for a start. I know the level of opposition is sort of a bottom half sort of tie, but regardless. But yeah, I just mean, in general, they won, but they didn't even look that special. They got this Iranian forward who's been there since last season, and he's been quite good, Zahedi. He's got himself 4 goals in, I think, past 2 games. And Teixeira, their sort of French winger, who's been there for a few seasons now, he's got 2 and 2. So he's basically, it's those two key men putting the strings in attack, getting the goals in. But overall, you could see that if they come up against a decent side, they're going to be undone because it got some nice personnel there. But, you know, there still doesn't look to be some sort of high quality tactics to their play.
And Menai, you mentioned them. Any concerns there from the game?
Yeah, they were just really flat. I just don't think they had many ideas coming into it. They played quite well against Alexandria last week, but, you know, these things happen, I guess. Probably not, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. Second game into the UPL. And they've brought in loads of players, so probably need them all to gel.
Certainly do, certainly do. And I apologise if I've forgotten any games, but I believe the last one we've got on our list for the Premier League was the first match at Arena Lviv in a very long time, with Ruch making their home debut. Andre, first of all, what did you think of the welcome into the stadium at the start of the match?
Yeah, I had the hands-on insights from Lviv because my friend was there and he was just, you know, now I support Ruch from my childhood, you know. I'm a long-time Ruch fan, he said to me. Although he's been to all Oblon matches recently and he's like, I'm a Ruch supporter now. And decent marketing, a lot to learn from for the rest of UPL teams. I mean, it's not UPL level. Because most of our teams, they play well, but that's it. It's done for them. They don't really even know the word marketing, apart from concerning how to use it properly. And Ruch definitely showed. But they lost to Kolas, to magnificent Kolas, to excellent Morozko, who's just unstoppable. I think he's got a newborn baby because following his celebration, well, congratulations to him. Congratulations to Kolas, to Kostishin. It shows that you don't need to rest after your Europa League games. It doesn't matter you win or lose. There is no time. And if you're on the roll, you would perform and you will get the result.
Neil, do you agree with Andre's sentiment there about, I mean, I think the concern with Kolas was the size of the squad. Were you surprised by the performance on Sunday and the victory? Your microphone. You need to turn your microphone up, Neil.
Sorry, yeah, no, not really. That's all I said anyway, was not really. So there wasn't really much to add to what Andre said, really. Completely agreed with him. But yeah, sorry, I was on mute.
No worries. Before we move on from Premier League, a couple of people asked predictions now after we've been through 3 games. Who do we see going down, taking those relegation spots? Any teams standing out, guys? Andrew?
Yeah, well, you could probably say that Ruch would be amongst them. I still would put money on Olympic to fall away, even though they've got these 2 wins. Who knows? Lviv definitely are going to be down there, even though they looked a bit spirited against Dinamo, but their squad is just an amalgamation of just random you know, random players from across Europe, which I don't really think there's any sort of strategy there. And maybe put Minai in there too, who haven't looked, who didn't look that great against Olympic. And I mean, that says a lot, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So,
gents, do you agree with Andrew there, Eddie? Anything you want to question?
No, I mean, Lviv definitely, tactically, they look quite weak. And as Andrew was saying, there doesn't seem to be a plan on recruitment at all. It's just like bodies in rather than quality. And Minai, again, I think they've made too many changes. You know, I think they could have stuck with some more of what they had last season, really, instead of trying to make wholesale changes. The way things are going, Nipur Adin, I think, will be there as well.
Interesting. Andre, do you see the Nipur Adin there with the other guys we've mentioned?
I would say so, yeah, I would agree. You could tell that Lviv, Olympic and Nipur 1, they just don't belong to Premier League. The Olympic Donetsk just doesn't have a fan base, and they play well in recent two games, but from the start of the season, the Olympic and Lviv are the names down below the table. Dnipro 1 might have joined them. And that would be a sight to see in the end of the season. But, you know, everything can happen.
Well, yeah, they won't be missed.
They won't be. I must apologise to everyone listening to this. We try normally to get things done as within an hour, but there's been so much going on, and we still want to do the Persia and the... through a good service. So stick with us. We'll got plenty more coming up. So Neil, it's great to have you with us this evening, and really enjoyed it so far. But you're quite well known in internet land as a Metalist supporter. How have the fans out in Kharkiv taken to metal coming onto the scene this year? What's it like out there at the moment?
Well, it's really hard to gauge because everybody has a sort of different take on metal as opposed to Metalist 1925. I mean, most people I know are 1925 fans. They started out 4 years ago, and they're sort of, they've got 650 members who all pay in a different amount. So it kind of feels almost like a Bundesliga team. And if you think the old Metalist always saw themselves as the people's team, and Metalist 1925 really does feel like the people's team. Like, for the, you can sponsor parts of the game, and you know, you can to help to the club. It's very sustainable. I mean, Sergei Storozhenko is in charge of the club, but it's all done in a very good way, and with a lot of fan engagement, you know, sort of like paying for your name to be on the scoreboard or around the pitch for certain games and things like that, and internet tickets. So it's a lot of people like it, and a lot of people, including, you know, quite well-known journalists, have been saying like how much they appreciate it that people didn't sit on their hands and wait for Yaroslavsky to come back in a chariot and save the old Metalist. Because that wasn't really going to happen anyway. The message I get from the club is that there's no animosity between 1925 and the new metal club. But then the messages that they send me sort of suggest that there might be a bit of niggle there, really. I think the fact that a lot of the... quite a lot of staff, like the security staff, went from 1925 to metal, and they sort of slated the people at 1925 after, which obviously didn't go down too well. Also, the involvement of Krasnikov, who was at Dynamo, who was part of the old Metalist. Nobody really knows who metal are. You know, their online forum is... there's really nothing. They haven't got a website even, I don't think. And they don't post much on Facebook or any other forum either. So no one really knows about them. At one point, it was reported that they were going to take the old Metalist name, but that turns out if you take that, you could end up with 50 to 60 million pounds of debt, dollars of debt, sorry. So, you know, and it's just the fact that they've sort of come from nowhere. Some people are a bit suspicious of Krasnikov being involved. Nobody knows how much Yaroslavsky, the old medalist guy who ended up giving the team to one of Yanukovych's friends, how much he's involved. And then the sort of quality of players they're getting in. I mean, like they've got this Yevgeny Ryazantsev, the 17-year-old winger who was attracting attention from Fiorentina and clubs like Fiorentina and Udinese. And now he's playing for Metal in the second league. And the fact that they're allowed in the second league, where by law they should spend a year in the amateurs. So people are a bit wary of them. But I think we touched on it a little bit when we were talking about Dnipro, in that everybody wants a team from Kharkiv. I mean, everyone from Kharkiv wants a team from Kharkiv in the Premier Division, and they don't mind who it is. There's a lot of support from the 1925 club because, you know, it has been set up as a cooperative. It feels a lot more natural. That's not saying people don't support Metal. And if, you know, he did come in on a... Yaroslavsky did come in on a white horse and save the club and Metal with the team, I think people would start getting behind Metal as long as they understood that the ultras might question his politics a little bit. But like I said, it's just a bit odd, the whole Metal, that they've stolen players, they've stolen staff. They're getting players like Ryazantsev in. This week, there's been rumours that Papagay, not the Watford one, the one who was at the old Metalist, and that Dnipro Adin might be joining the club as well. So, you know, people are just a little bit suspicious of them because not a lot's been said about them. I know Kharkiv journalists have contacted the DCH group and said, what is Yaroslavsky? Is he part of this club or not? And there's been no answer, really. And Krasnikov saying he gets advice from him but not money from him. So nobody's really sure what this Metal team is, I think. And as I've said, I don't think Kharkiv is big enough for two good teams. I mean, in the past, we've seen other teams just fall away, and Metalist being the main one. But they need a team, and they need a team in the Premier League. And I think the general feeling is that most people would like it to be 1925, but it is not 1925. And it is a team that in some ways resembles the old Metalist, and it's in the Premier League, then that's fine. You know, so that's the take on it, really.
You've been happy with Metalist's start to the season? Just as an add-on.
Yeah, although they've not been playing great. I mean, a 1-0 win at the weekend, and Sidorenko, the goalkeeper, was definitely man of the match, so that tells you what sort of bag, really. But I think we all expected that. I mean, after the season where they missed out on promotion by 1 point, there was all the problems of last season, which included, you know, the team doctor dying and then people going to Metal and complete change of the coaching staff. I think, obviously, the playoffs is a name, but, you know, in other forums that I've been on, a lot of people aren't really expecting much from Metalist this season. And, you know, hoping we'll squeeze into the playoffs is, I think, the best we can hope for at the moment, really, unless things change quickly. I mean, Derek's a great player, and Jan-Paul, he's quite frustrating, but he's always there in the thick of the action. And, you know, if we can get some of the other players playing, then things could get better. But I think there are stronger teams in there at the moment.
Definitely. Andre, as an Obolon fan, do you see Metalist as contenders alongside you this season?
Plenty of them, to be fair. You can still remember the last season's contenders, which are Volyn and Agrobusiness, but they don't perform that good nowadays, and it doesn't seem they will proceed to promotion in the end. I would put my bets on VPK, Agro, and Allianz, because Allianz is in second place so far, and they recently had a derby, and I even screenshot the final result, because there's something charming in those two teams. I mean, and they would fit so perfectly in the recent Premier League of these days, when we have Minai, Ruch, and Kolos performing differently and having, you know, fighting for the hearts of neutral fans. and it would be a great ensemble, but there are a lot of it's really evenly matched this season. So Pesha Liha, we still have Polisa, Niva Ternopil, a lot of unpredictable sides, to be honest. We have Olovko in Kremlin beating Volyn in the first game of the season. I mean, it's really hard to predict anything. One thing for sure is that I don't see Obolon in that top numbers. And well, I could tell you more about that shortly. But yeah, Metalist and Chernomorets and the clubs I mentioned previously are really, really up for it, and they deserve to be on top.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Chernomorets. Alper on Twitter asked, do we see them coming back to the Premier League this season? End of this season? You do, Neil?
Yeah, I do. Allianz and Chernomorets are the two that I would tip to go up. A lot of people have laughed at me for saying that, especially Allianz, but I'm really glad that Andre has said that as well. I think if you watch a lot of Persia Liga, they are a team that really impress. And I think Chernomorets are finally turning the corner. And I know a lot of people in Ukraine who know the league well seem to think that this is Chernomorets' year. And then maybe we're just pessimistic about our own clubs with a lot of Metalists, but let's hope they're up there challenging as well, really.
Definitely. Big game on Saturday down in Odessa there, with Chernomorets playing Verez, who are also unbeaten so far this season. And Neil, maybe you can help me out here. I forget the name of the old Metalist centre forward who's just moved to Verez this summer and has already getting a couple of goals. You're in the same boat as me. The name just escapes you at that moment. I know.
I think I even made a note of it earlier as well. That's the worst thing.
Gagan Bosch or something like that. His name will come back to me.
Yeah, Gagadosh, I think.
That was it, wasn't it? Gagadosh. He didn't do so well in Metalist last season, but he seems to have got a couple of goals already for Verez. It's going to be a great game on Saturday down in Odessa there. Andrew, you've been impressed with Chernomorets. Do you agree with the guys here?
Yeah, I've caught a few of the highlights of their opening matches. They look pretty good with Serhii Kovalets as their manager, who is experienced in the UPL. So I think they're definitely a good shout. They've made quite a few nuanced signings, a few good players, got a nice kit as well going on. So I think it's a big season for them coming up. Like you said, Allianz as well, they're looking good. They've now got their sort of cup distraction out of the way. I think they got knocked out last week, so they can solely focus on the league.
Yeah, we won't mention their cup run.
So that would be good. And the likes of, you know, Metalist 1925 playing well, that would be also. But what essentially what does look positive from these only opening three games is that if you look at those top teams, with the UPL expanding to 16 sides as it was pre the start of the war in 2014, we're going to have hopefully some of the bigger cities all represented in the Ukrainian top flight. You know, Odessa, Chernomorets, of course, Metalist, albeit if there's some sort of merger with Metal at the end of the season, if they do get promoted, no one knows what's going on, as Neil's already alluded to. And similarly, even Allianz, because even though Allianz are quite a small side from Lipovodolina, they're going to be playing at the Sumy Jubilejny Stadium, where they play now. And, you know, that would be a nice stadium to see some fans turn up to, you know, seeing as that's what it was built for. So, you know, all credit to everyone. Hopefully we get some of these big cities representing in the top flight.
I should add there as well that FC Sumy have just made their debut in the Amateur League this year. So if Allianz do end up in the top spots, I can foresee a merger of some sort coming along there. And another shout out. A few weeks ago, remember, we were dissing Sumy Region football quite harshly, as you quite well remember there. But Victoria Mikolaevka as well have progressed to the third stage of the cup this week as well there, as from Sumy Region. Give a shout out to Sumy. Moving on. This weekend, we've got Metalist away at Crystal. Must be confident of 3 points down there, Neil.
I'm never confident of any of my clubs, actually, but as confident as you can be, you'd hope that Metalist would win that one and comfortably, but you never know. You never know who's going to turn up at Metalist. That's a problem.
Another big game that's cropping up on the fixture list on Saturday is Allianz travelling to Agribusiness. Now, we know they're not quite performing to the same level as last year, but a good test for Allianz early on this season. How do you see that going on,
gentlemen? Oh, I don't know. I think it'd be a good game and quite a close game. As we've already said, we think that Allianz are going to be a team that are going to be hard to beat. I wouldn't be surprised to see this as a draw, though, because I think Agribusiness are probably the team I'd have finishing third behind Chernomorets Moritz and Allianz at the moment. So although they haven't started off well, I expect Agribusiness to give them some aggro, really. Yeah. I actually get the one in.
Well, that was terrible.
I have to have a dad joke in there somewhere.
And a quick shout out before we wrap up tonight to the Druher Liga, as I know we have a number of Karpaty loving fans that listen. What's our take on the new Karpaty and how they've started this year? Any opinions, gents, at all? Not a lot of them.
Yeah, it's not been good, has it? I mean, I think they opened up with two losses, which was both batterings, but they've brought it back. With a win, so at least they're maybe on the right trajectory now. But you never know; it's just literally one win out of, I think, their first win in almost 365 days or something like that. I don't know. I saw a Facebook post about it, and it was it's been a while. And they're above Karpaty Halic in the Druha Liga table at the moment, just a point separating them, where a lot of the Karpaty players have moved over to. So I think the average age of Karpaty Lviv at the moment is something like under 21. It really is basically a youth team. And there's still sort of no real... there's been no reveal from the club and from the sort of the strategic manager, Serhiy Bonotnikov, who used to present Tato Taker, popular Ukrainian football YouTube channel, as in what's going on. It's still just wait. Everything's all under control. You'll find out soon. Right. Okay. And you know, the usual meme stuff as well. Actually, on Karpaty, I was in Spain 2 weeks ago for the old Spain-Ukraine game, and in the box with me in the press box was none other than Oleg Smalichuk. Tried to have a conversation with him, but I don't think he was too open to speaking to a journalist from England. He was literally like, "Who the F are you?" And yeah, it ended relatively abruptly. But, you know, good luck to Karpaty, I guess.
Yes, fingers crossed. And I believe it is Karpaty Galic who they are playing on Sunday. Big game in that division. Big game in that division. It will be in Klimaninsky as well, where Padilla, who have started off the season strongly, are hosting Dinas. Another one of these smaller teams that have got huge ambitions. And, I mean, got to give a lot of credit. We spoke a little bit about marketing with Rook earlier on, but the PFL do a great job with it. And all these games that we mentioned are available on YouTube through the PFL website. The links are there. every match day, I was clicking between Vélez's game and Alianza's games this afternoon and able to watch both of them live, which is a brilliant piece of work by the marketing department at the PFL there. Metel, sorry, Neil. We mentioned Metalist's game on Saturday down at Crystal. Their game is on Friday evening. As far as I can see on the fixture list, it is the only game on Friday, giving us a three-day weekend there for football listeners. I hope people will get tuned in. Well, gents, it's been, yeah, it's been an epic one tonight.
Yeah.
For anybody who's still listening, an hour and a half in, all credit to you, all credit to you. You know, we really appreciate all the listeners, and big thank you to everybody. Neil, really been great to have you with us tonight. We enjoyed
it. Thanks for having me. It's been great. It's been great fun.
If people want to get in touch, what's the best way of our social media to find you?
Probably on my Twitter account, which you know, which is where I know you really. I think
It's at N Holloway.
NF Holloway Neil, I think it is. Is it? Yeah. Oh God, I don't remember myself.
Okay.
NF at NF Holloway _ Neil. What a great.
And Andre, over to you again. Just a little social media shout out.
Instagram Oblong Casual.
I'll be looking for that.
Cheers.
We're going to get a bit of a rivalry going between 1925.
Yeah, that'll be good. They're better at beer than us. So.
It's a good job this is a virtual podcast. We're not sat around a bar now.
Well, they definitely make better beer than Metalists, that's for sure. But anyway.
And over to you, Andrew.
Yeah, at Zorya Londonsk, follow me on Twitter or Instagram, just for the usual memes, movie posters, and good old Ukrainian football chat.
And I'm Adam at Ukrafot24. You can find me on most social media sites as well. I enjoy joining in with the occasional banter as it goes on. Right. This is the end of our 7, 4, 8. We lose count of the podcast, but we enjoy every single one of them as much as we hope you do as well. Have a great evening, everybody, and I look forward to talking to you in 2.